present the news quiz with your chairman, Barry Took.
Hello and welcome once again to the news quiz. We start with a cutting from DIY Week, sent to us by Philip Leach of Redhill and read by Charlotte Green.
An employee of Graham DIY Exmouth was ordered to do 180 hours of community service after stealing over £3,000 worth of goods from his employer. John Hawkins was ordered to pay £1,500 in compensation. This amount was considerably less than the retail value stolen, as the court took account of his staff discount.
Thank you, Charlotte. Well, now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Richard Ingrams and Francis Ween. Facing them, on my left, Alan Corran and Martin Young. Before we start round one, here's a cutting from the Craven Herald, sent to us by Michael Noon of Keighley.
Thieves had stolen 2,700 Douglas fir saplings from the Bolton Abbey estate. They're valued at £450, and police believe a vehicle must have been used to take the trees away.
Gosh. Richard, your first question. Who were in for a Downing Street shout?
Well, so many people shouting in Downing Street these days. But I think it may be the Reverend Ian Peasley.
It certainly is.
Who's the only... is the only man, as somebody pointed out, he's the only man unpopular enough with the entire British nation for Major to feel justified in getting angry with. So they had a shouting match.
That's right.
And Paisley said he didn't want to be part of the peace process.
Anyway, you're absolutely right. It is the John Major, Ian Paisley slanging match, the greatest meeting of mine since Sooty met Sweep. The much-ridiculed marginal political figure met Ian Paisley at Downing Street, where they clashed over the government's policy on the future of Northern Ireland, the role of the RUC, and whose dad could drink more beer. At Downing Street, source claimed the tough-talking Prime Minister was so angry that he said rubbish twice. Ian Paisley shouted so loudly that after the meeting it took a good hour before his voice quietened down to its usual bellow. Francis, your question now. Whose constitution proved to be less than iron?
Could this be that woman who went to Chile and gave a speech?
Yes.
And it was such a dull speech, she went to sleep herself. She sent herself to sleep. But afterwards, she took with her her personal dresser, this wonderful woman called Crawfee, who said that, in fact, it was that Mrs. Thatcher had eaten something that disagreed with her, which is the only thing that's ever dared disagree with her.
You're quite right, it's absolutely so. This is Lady Thatcher, who became ill while visiting Mr. Pinochet and friends in Chile. No wonder she felt sick, having to deal with all those softy liberals. The mystery illness might have been caused by spending too much time with Dennis. It can be very nasty, this passive drinking. Let's move on. Martin. Martin, who didn't like too much explicit action between the covers?
Oh, I think this was Mr. Mawinney, who they commissioned a book called The Sex Guide. To their horror, they discovered there were things about sex in it. They discovered that there were things about sexual practices in the sex guide, so they banned it. It's another terrific government U-turn.
It's actually called the Pocketbook of Sex.
Sorry, is that a particular sexual practice?
No, it kept me thinking for a bit.
Wasn't it sponsored by Mars? Or have I got that wrong?
No. The Mars bar was what got Thatcher.
Ah, sort of witch.
I think this has gone too far. I think we'll get back to the script. This is Health Minister Brian McWhinney, who banned a Health Education Authority pocket sex guide. He found it wore big holes in his trousers. McWhinney, who is said to be Virginia Bottomley's right hand, was accused... ...was accused in the midst of a sex education row by the publishers of looking for a scapegoat. And they recommend he reads Chapter 8 first. As usual... A first piece of music for you, Alan.
Let's all go down the strand.
Have a banana.
Let's all go down the strand.
I'll be leader, you can march behind. Come with me and see what you can find.
That's the place for fun and noise, all among the girls and boys. So let's all go down the Strand.
Well, that was Richard Ingram's friend, Max Bygrave, singing Let's All Go Down the Strand. And your question is, Alan, who wants to go Deutsch for the 50th celebration?
I thought it was about the banana. I thought this was a second sex guide that had been produced. Well, there's a lot of argy-bargy this week about Jerry coming over here and goose stepping up and down and upsetting veterans and the Queen and people like that. And this occasioned an about turn by Mr. John Major, who originally extended an invitation to the Germans. And then they brought him a map, and he said, oh, that's where Germany is. Because I was with the circus when the last lot broke out. And they're going to be allowed to march in lounge suits. It's true. They were going to have people who marched in their old uniforms with all their iron crosses jangling and catching the sunlight. It would have been very exciting. But now they're going to be allowed to come here, and the veterans are going to be allowed to come, but provided they don't wear medals and things. I mean, that was on Thursday night. I mean, it could be anything by the repeat.
But the veterans have actually already put their towels in the Strand, haven't they?
Major may allow Japanese bankers to dive off the Milbank Tower onto a spire by the time the repeat comes up. You can never tell with this government. The Italians are walking backwards down the Strand. They'll be there. Is there anybody out there who'd like to be offended? There are plenty of people.
This is John Major making up for Germany's disappointment over the EC voting row by inviting their armed forces to visit London for VE Day. It'll make a nice change for them to see it at daylight and a bit closer than 20,000 feet this year. And afterwards, lest we forget, the scene of our most significant victory, there'll be a sightseeing trip to Wembley Stadium. And the scores, unsurprisingly, at the end of the first round are, as they always are, 4-4. We start round two with a snippet sent to us by Dr. and Mrs. Walker of Horsham.
Islamabad police on Monday took it upon themselves to fix up the press, taking the line of ruling party leaders who claim that the press is irresponsible. Police beat up press photographers to make them responsible.
Richard, your question again. What father was embarrassed by an unholy racket?
I've answered my question for this week.
Well, we'd like to go on for a bonus.
It must be to do with John Selwyn Gummer.
It must be, and it is. It always is.
But as for the details...
I'm very sorry, my shorthand isn't up to writing down all the details before Richard answers.
Well, perhaps you could talk about Francis.
It's the new... Now he's become a Roman Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
His local Catholic priest has told the congregation to stop shouting during the hymns. And this has happened the week Gummer joined the church. Suddenly there was this outbreak of shouting, rather like Ian Paisley. And he's told them to tone down. If they can't sing in tune, don't sing at all.
Quite right. Absolutely right. Brilliant.
Was Gummer singing?
Well, the finger of suspicion is pointing at Gummer, isn't it?
Yes. Francis, you did so well with that. Here's one for you. Whose old master was off the wall for 3 months?
The Queen, who had a picture nicked from one of her spare rooms and didn't notice. And it's a picture of somebody eating a waffle. Two oldies eating a waffle. And it's obviously nobody's ever looked at this picture before because there's now great excitement because it was thought that waffles hadn't been invented before this century, but it now turns out that they were very common 200 years ago.
You're absolutely right, Francis. This refers to the theft of a painting from Buckingham Palace that went unnoticed for 3 months. Contrary to common belief, an elderly couple in an arbour... Isn't the picture of the Queen Mother and Margaret after they had one too many and fell off the royal yacht? In fact, it's a Dutch old master by Adrian van Ostade, valued at £100,000. It's suspected that the theft was an inside job. For many years, the Queen's pictures were looked after by Sir Anthony Blunt, but you just can't get trustworthy staff these days. Martin, will you have a listen to this?
Let us both drink to this moment that it's held forever near. Pour the wine across my face, then bring the bottle over here. Take us away, make the room begin to sway.
make us forget about tomorrow. Do what you will with us, make something of today.
And your question is, where will the good booze cost less?
I'll say it without whispering, as Alan just did. Sainsbury's is going to cost a lot less for the Bordeaux Rosé.
No, they're opening a Sainsbury's across the water.
They're opening a Sainsbury's across the water in Calais.
Uh-huh.
Yes, and it'll be cheaper over there.
Wait, Rosé.
Yes, well,
Waitrose got royal appointment this week, didn't she?
Yes,
well, yeah.
Amazing.
I don't know what happens,
because Waitrose don't deliver, so presumably one of them had to go to Waitrose.
Guess which one?
Had a trolley with no number plate.
But it's
another trolley following with three policemen on it.
It said on the royal
and
warrant.
She just reached up and got a tin of beans, and that was appointment.
When she's at Windsor Castle, it's the Queen Mother. She's given it the warrant. She pops down there to the
really?
Very good wine section in Waitrose.
Not anymore, not if you
It is the news that Sainsbury's are to open a store in France so that visiting British shoppers can buy cheap drink to take back home. The grand opening will be marked by the local mayor unveiling a ceremonial upside-down supermarket trolley on a roundabout just outside Calais. Sainsbury's have started language courses for staff with such useful phrases as pardon monsieur, this trolley closed. And combien sont les 8 ounces of knobs, Tracy? Enough of jollity. Alan, where did a call from the dock dial up trouble?
Oh, well, I'm glad he got it. It's sickening for the rest of us who are sitting in cinemas and trains and these fools keep getting their phone calls. There was a bloke up for various things you're up for, fraud and theft, burglary and all the rest. Mm-hmm. And time was hanging a bit heavy in the court while his brief talked to the judge, so he was taking calls. And eventually, when the judge was woken by someone, it was brought to his attention. And this upset the beak enormously, and this man's got an extra sentence using a phone in a dock.
That's right. That's all absolutely right. It was at the Old Bailey where a defendant in a robbery case was caught in the dock making calls on his mobile phone. Now he faces even more serious charges, 48 pence a minute during peak time. At first, the judge didn't seem to notice this intrusion of modern gadgetry because he had DJ Shaggy too loud on his Walkman. Then the hearing had to be adjourned when 12 pizzas arrived for the jury. We have come to the end of round two, and the scores, good heavens, they're still tied at 8-all. Well, Richard, it's your turn again. Where did the cops cop it while Di was dining?
This is to do with Princess Diana, I take it.
Yes. Well worked out.
Yes.
What he was about to say was that she went out for lunch.
That's right.
With Clive James?
Oh, with, I think, Eric Clapton and Clive James and Kylie Minogue and those sorts of people.
Those sort of people.
And it's something to do with, I think, the new criminal justice bill. There's an amendment to it whereby if you're a Princess of Wales and you park on a double yellow line, policemen will come along and put a little thing on your windscreen saying, car out of order, please do not tow away, or put a parking ticket on it. All part of the service. And these two coppers have now been in big trouble for letting her off her parking fine.
Yes, these were two London bobbies who were reprimanded for giving Princess Diana special treatment. The mind boggles at what constitutes special treatment in her case. They let Her Highness park on a yellow line while she went for lunch. She said she'd only be 2 minutes. Now then, Francis, some music for you.
76 trombones led the big parade, with 110 cornets close at hand. They were followed by rows and rows of the finest virtuosos, the green of every famous band. 76 trombones caught the morning sun, with 110 cornets right behind. There were more than 1,000 reeds springing up like weeds. There were horns of every shape and kind.
Who was drummed out of the band for making sweet music?
It's a Territorial Army brass band.
Yes.
And it's been stricken by an outbreak of what you might call buckery, as in bienvenida.
I see.
I hasten to add. Because
well pronounced, that.
Following the example of the former chief of the General Staff, or whatever he was called, They've all been running off with one another, and two of them have been suspended for going to bed with one another. And the two people who reported it have also been suspended in some kind of even-handedness. And so they're now two bassoons short. And...
But I think the Sun actually had it in a couple of words. Crumpet voluntary, I think, was what they had. You can always rely on the old current bun, can't you?
Martin, why is pure genius no longer so clever?
Ah, because they've been running these terrific adverts with the guy looks rather like myself, actually, a mane of blonde hair, you know, tall, good-looking, you know, very much like me. Mm. He's been standing in cornfields looking like a scarecrow, as one does, because it's 100,000 to throw. I mean, it's worth it. And nobody understands what the heck the adverts are about. So they've now decided that there's actually no point in spending several million pounds on these adverts because nobody knows quite what they're selling.
Yes, that's exactly so. Guinness
in Ireland. Is there...
What?
Guinness. I mean, what's the reaction in Ireland?
They understand them.
I just saw this thing.
If you've had enough Guinness, large... you know what it's about.
Yes.
Like a large scarecrow from one of my friends.
It's amazing, really, isn't it? And the Irish are obviously much smarter than we are.
Absolutely. It's
He's a German, Guinness. That tall bloke. That tall one with the blonde hair.
An Irish German.
He's an Irish kraut. No wonder they couldn't understand it. Irish kraut scarecrow. They want to sell beer.
I mean...
It's astonishing, isn't it, the advertising industry?
Dare I say that now he's a sauerkraut?
No.
No, all right. Yes, Guinness are looking for a new campaign to represent their drink. It's famous for being black with a white head. Michael Jackson should be available. Alan, what prosecution case was mown down?
I was rather hoping it was going to be that cod at the National Fisheries Heritage Centre. Are we getting that?
No.
Oh,
what's that? Tell us about that.
No.
Go on. Don't be coy.
Grimsby has a... You know... Did you see something in the Telegraph? Grimsby has a National Fishery Heritage Centre. And children are taken through it to sort of see fish. And the biggest fish they've got... They've got the biggest cod ever caught in England. They caught it about 7 years ago. It's this enormous cod. And on Wednesday, when a group of children was going through, a lobster in the same tank killed this cod. The children then went off for lunch to a local fish and chip shop where they found the staff of the National Fisheries Heritage Centre eating the cod. Marvellous story. No, this is about... this is one that I mean... very aware of libel, defamation, all that. I still can't quite believe. This is the man who wasn't put on a motor mower by someone who might or might not have been a friend of the wife who probably loved him dearly.
Allegedly.
And there was no intention of killing this man, purely by accident, while he was unconscious. He accidentally sleptwalked himself into the seat of a Qualco Panther and went off on a Le Mans start, like a Ferrari, straight into the garden pond of this couple, who were then totally unfairly charged with getting rid of a husband.
The prosecution alleged the pair planned to kill Mr. Wybrow in a fake accident on a ride on lawnmower. That's a plot familiar to Cluedo players, who often win the game by placing Colonel Mustard in the library with a Qualcast. Meanwhile, police investigating the mysterious disappearance of a sweet old gardener are keen to locate a middle-aged couple last seen on television thumbing through the yellow pages. Let me tell you the scores at the end of round three, which are remarkable, because they're still tied, 12-all. We start round four with a piece from the Daily Telegraph sent to us by Darren Gunson of Hatfield Peveril.
Two armed raiders got impatient waiting for a shop cashier to hand over money. The 17-year-old girl, who began work at the Super Sig store in Bearwood on Tuesday, ignored them and carried on serving another customer. The raiders said, "Forget it," and walked out.
That's the way to deal with them. Thank you, Darren, for sending us that cutting. A final piece of music is yours, Richard.
I get away from the hustling crowd and all that rat race noise down in the street. or the room, the only place I know, where you just have to wish to make it so. Let's go up on the roof.
And the question is, who was one slate short of a full roof, boyo?
I haven't a bloody clue.
Francis Ween is supplying the answer.
It's a Welsh rugby fan who sold his roof to go to Twickenham to watch the rugby match, to Wales lose to England. Ripped the slates off his roof in the middle of the night, didn't tell his wife, flogged them in the morning, caught the next train to Paddington.
Yeah.
And he's now roofless.
No, he's not roofless, actually. He's called Steve Spiller. He raised 265 quid. He went to London and he couldn't get a ticket from the touts, so he stood outside the ground and he heard the roars of the crowd. It's all rather sad. But when he got back, a nice businessman had given him a whole load of new slates.
Really?
So all he's got to do now is put them back on and
I think you're fine.
It warms the cockles of your heart, though, doesn't it?
Well, no, not really.
It's a bit Martin Lewis for me. Yeah. You're absolutely right. Give him a bonus for that, because he really did answer it exactly perfectly right. Francis, who became expressly disorientated and threw punches over lunches?
Oh, yes, express, as in the Orient Express, perhaps. St. Valentine's Day?
Yes.
Romantic voyage round Kent. Why do you want to go on train journey round Kent on Valentine's Day? I don't know, especially because they had to pay. It's an enormous sum for the privilege, about 200 quid or something, just to chug round Kent for a couple of hours on the Orient Express. But
I mean, go anywhere else now. That's all it does.
But yes, I mean, it's sort of Orient. It's southeast. And this couple had a row, as people do on Valentine's Day. And they thought that one of the other diners in the restaurant car was sniggering at them, and so the bloke got up and clocked him. And it then turned into a sort of John Majory and Paisley session with plates of British Rail food or Orient Express food being held about. And he was convicted this week.
It was a punch-up on the exotic, mysterious Orient Express as it sped through exotic, mysterious Kent. Quite right. Trouble flared when Leela Parker and John Page got a bit Sainsbury's and thought people... They thought people were laughing at them during their £170 lunch. Anyone paying 170 quid to have lunch on Network South East? There's every reason to think people might laugh. Next year they're going out on the Northern Line at closing time. It's a lot cheaper and you can guarantee a good fight and a couple of meals thrown in. That was written by somebody who's had a nasty experience. Martin, your question now. What's the latest word on the search for the lost ball?
Is this the one that the English cricket team can't hit?
No.
No.
Is this about the people digging up Hitler's body?
There's no need to be unpleasant, Francis.
Ah, there's a clue in there somewhere.
No, my colleague would like to tell you more detail on this.
You've got all the points.
There's a man called, I think, Mr. Besh, who's tired of losing his golf ball. So he's got a golf ball that talks to the hole. He gets up in the morning and down the 18 holes of his golf course, he puts a little transponder and it talks to his ball. And when he hits the ball and it doesn't turn up, he goes to the hole and puts his ear to it and it says, it's over there. It's true. It's talking golf ball. I mean, if you think Welshmen are barking mad, try golfers. This man talks to his ball.
It's the latest British development in golf technology. Balls that talk. Yes, I'm on a tightrope here, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, we lead the world when it comes to talking golf technology. The ball's development hasn't been without problem. Recently, one was activated whilst in the trouser pocket of a golfer relaxing in the clubhouse. The resultant message of, I'm in here, caused the lady captain to faint.
No, she was just pleased to see him.
Alan. Your final question. Why was there a long-distance coup in China?
was a homing pigeon, but his home was in, I believe, Wales. It was going back to a hole in a roof in Wales. And the way they have it, it was released in the south of France. And the plan was for it to come back to Wales and go into its thing and get its medal and all that. It didn't turn up for 2 years, and it's now in China. Pigeon's wife said he only went out for a packet of fags. I mean, no one really knows why it's in China. Well, anyway, it got there, but they don't know how it got there. They think it sort of walked and hopped a bit, because it can't fly that far.
It's all about a homing pigeon that should have flown back to Somerset from France 2 years ago, but ended up in China. The pigeon was known by the name GB84F28946, but his happy new Chinese owner has shortened it to number 46 with yellow bean sauce. Before we reveal the final scores, let's see what cuttings the teams brought about. Richard, have you brought a cutting for us?
It so happens that I have.
Oh, good.
It's from the Times.
Oh,
an unusual item from the Times. A woman disturbed by her front windows being smashed found a large ram injured and bleeding in her living room in Caistor, Lincolnshire. Police said it probably saw its reflection in the window and decided to have a fight.
Francis, what have you brought for us?
This is from a local paper in Southport, and it's about Gareth Wynne-Jones, the owner of Baker's Chemist in Liverpool Road, has now been burgled for the 40th time in 20 years. The latest raid saw thieves breaking through his front door, taking £500 worth of perfume from a display cabinet. Mr. Wynne-Jones, after so many break-ins, is taking it all philosophically. They didn't take the condoms or the shampoo, so I suppose the police should start looking for bald Catholics, he said.
It's an interesting thought. Well done. Martin, what have you brought for us?
I've got a small tragedy for you from M. Sugden of Ellsworth in Cambridgeshire. A court in Vancouver, British Columbia, awarded David Matatal $632 in medical costs stemming from a car accident in 1991. Matatal had sued his mother for closing her car door on the paw of Matatal's cat, Daisy. Daisy will not benefit from the money since she was subsequently run over by another car.
Thank you. Alan.
It's one from the Sun. It says, a stack of Cliff Richard tapes were eaten by a pet dog in Plymouth, Devon. It survived. Got one about a parrot from the Guardian. A Swedish court has ordered a burglar to pay £255 in damages for frightening a parrot when he broke into a house. The parrot is now afraid to stay at home alone.
Thank you very much. Thank you all. Let's look at the final scores. We're damn close because Richard and Francis have got 16, very well earned, but Alan and Martin just crept ahead with 1 point. They're 17. This week's winners. Before we leave you, here's a cutting sent to us by Ida Cook of Southampton.
I was defending myself, my possessions, and my dog, said a New York woman who shot a fire officer who broke into her flat to warn her the building was on fire.
On that cheery note, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Richard Ingrams, Alan Corran, Francis Ween, and Martin Young. The chairman was Barry Took, and the news was read by me, Charlotte Green. The programme was written by Ian Pattinson and Robert Fraser-Steele. The producer was Alad Evans.